Crime Scene and Cupcakes is an independent podcast created in the Anchor app, funded mainly through advertising. The podcast often has coarse language and disturbing content. Please listen wisely. Hey guys, it's Marianne, Dog Mom, Baker, True Crime Podcast Maker, and today we're going to talk about the Sedgwick County Sheriff's Office Cold Case Initiative. And before anyone says anything, I know I've already covered it. I know I've talked about it a few times, but you guys, this is an important thing. You guys need to be going to this website. You guys need to understand, we haven't had something like this. This is awesome. And also, we have something new today. We have an interview with Sergeant Matthew Lynch from the Sedgwick County Sheriff's Office, who's going to explain how this got started, how it works, and what we can do to help. So, that's something new. But I want to explain to you guys why this is so important to me real quick. Now, I don't know if any of you are familiar with Project Cold Case. Project Cold Case is a website that was founded in 2015. And their original idea was to simply add unsolved murder victims' photos to a website. They just wanted to do that to let people know that there was still somebody out there who cared, and to tell their stories so that they wouldn't be forgotten. That was it. But that expanded to offering insight to survivors' families and law enforcement and how they could work together. And that's what family and friends wanted, just to know that their loved one wasn't forgotten. And let me tell you guys, there are some of these cases that are on this unsolved site that are particularly vicious. These were people's daughters, husbands, wives, friends. Some of these people didn't even have a chance to get a name. So we want to keep their names alive. We want to keep their cases alive. So take a moment, listen to this interview with Sergeant Matthew Lynch, and find out what you can do to help victims like my friend, Krista Martin, and others. Thank you. So Sergeant Lynch took us on a tour of the department when we first got there. And that's one of the pieces I really wanted to see. I wanted to see the cold case room. Now, I've seen a lot of cold case rooms. I've seen a lot of the cold case record rooms. I've seen them from New Haven, Connecticut to Littleton, Colorado. And when the door was swung open, I was impressed. The boxes were stacked neatly on shelves. Each person's name and case number was printed legibly. The thing that got me the most, though, is the boxes were worn. There was no dust on them. The tops looked as if they've been opened and closed and opened again, as each investigator's been searching for answers, digging through them only to be shelved again, waiting for the next person. Making our way back to Sergeant Lynch's office, Captain Tracy Spire came out of his office and he looked so excited. I couldn't help but get caught up in his excitement. And he said, "Thumbs up. We would like to solve one of these before we retire." Now, Sergeant Lynch, he nodded and just kind of looked, "Yep, you betcha." but I could tell he was a little bit more realistic in his expectations. Then we settled down in our seats and we started our interview. But I wanted to let you guys know, this interview was more than a podcaster. This interview was somebody who has someone that they loved and cared about on the cold case list. Excuse me, we are not going to call them cold cases. They're not cold. They're unsolved. I need to get out of that mindset. Her case isn't cold. It's unsolved because I have an army. That army may not be big today, but we've got people like True Crime B&B and so many other podcasters out there that have joined the ranks that it's just amazing. The True Crime podcast family, Method and Madness. I know we are out there spreading the word, and eventually somebody's going to come forward. Somebody's going to have the information. As you will hear Sergeant Matthew Lynch say, that's what we need. We have provided a link to the SedgwickCounty.org Sheriff's Unsolved Homicides website. If you are able, please click on that link and follow along so you are able to see the unsolved homicides as you are listening to Sergeant Matthew Lynch's interview with Crime Scene and Cupcakes.
In November of last year, we got contacted from an East Coast state investigative agency, and they had some information that they wanted us to follow up on here locally on a cold case that they had been working, and they'd received a tip from somebody that led them to Central County, and they asked us if we could go kind of look into that a little bit for them, which happens, I don't want to say quite a bit, but it's not an infrequent request. We get these from time to time. Other agencies do the same thing. It's such a transient, you know, lifestyle these days that people do travel a lot. So we went out and we took care of that for them. And when they sent it to us, they also sent us a newspaper article and some things just to familiarize us with the case. So as I was looking through that, I kind of wondered, like, I wonder what the footprint we have in the social media realm or just on the internet for our cold cases. And to be honest with you, as I started to look, we didn't have much of anything. We did have a couple, ones that had happened more in the maybe last decade. Mm-hmm. They were, the original cases were covered and things like that. But to get anything else, you really had to get into, oh, like newspapers.com or some of these places that you can really get back and look through the historical documents, you know, of society. And that's where we start to see our people. Well, most people are not going to go to that length to research right. something. So I started talking with Captain Tracy Spryer, who you met, and we kind of hatched a plan to start to do something a little more thorough. So they sent me some training in Pennsylvania and went through that and kind of started formulating the plan of just basically putting some really simple information on the cases on the website and hopefully getting, I think, what do they call it? Like search engine optimization or something like that.
Yeah.
So if by chance we have someone in Seattle, Washington, who's talking about a homicide in Sedgwick County, then their friends could look on there and be like, oh my gosh, this really is something. We should call them and tell them, hey, this guy's talking about this case here. So that's what we've done. We kept it pretty basic, just as so we could get the information out and it'll allow somebody to locate that information. I don't know one question you gave me was, I think you used the term, what did you say? What did you call them? True crime nerds. yeah. And I know there's a lot of podcasts out there like that. It may be frustrating to them because there's not a lot of meat on the bone for them to dig into and really start evaluating the case. So I don't know that we satisfy their needs, but it definitely is helping us get this stuff out there, and it's keeping it at the forefront of everyone here.
Well, and that's something I actually wanted to discuss with you, because what I have done, because when you guys put that out there, it obviously got my brain clicking. And so I started searching a little bit, and there was one case, I'm trying to remember her name without searching off the top of my head, but she was a young lady in Derby. Mm-hmm. And the FBI got involved because her roommate had stated that she left without her dog, without anything. And I did cover that a little bit of the case of just some of the broad strokes that you guys had out there. But even in those little instances, I think, and then I searched a little bit of just what the FBI had and the little bit of information. Mm-hmm. And even though it's not much, I mean, I think you can still find just a little bit more. And so I utilized that. And that was one of the things I wanted to talk to you about is how do you guys feel about when us true crime nerds add a little bit when we find it from another law enforcement agency or a news article?
Sure. Well, I think you're speaking of the Jennifer Wilson case.
Yes.
Which is a no-body case for us. We'd really like to locate that. I think initially, as somebody who came on this job in 1997, it was still at that point pretty much, we didn't release a lot. We might do one or two press releases on a homicide and that'd be it. Mm-hmm. And we would keep track of that. We would keep track of the newspaper. We would know exactly what information had been released to the public, and we would control that just to the most finite details. Initially, it's a little difficult. But I think it serves a purpose because all your listeners, some of your listeners, will go to this website and they may remember something. So I think it's a necessary thing. I think it's positive. I think sometimes it can be frustrating for us, but I think when you peel away some of that and get to what meat is on that bone, I think it's worth it. I think it's absolutely worth it. It's hard for me to say something negative about people who want to dig deeper into what we do and try to help us. And I really think in the podcast that I have listened to that's really what people are trying to do. I don't think we have a lot of people that are listening to these podcasts or conducting themselves doing illegal things to try to get better by listening to your podcast. So I think that's always the concern initially is like, oh, are we educating criminals here? I really don't feel like any of these true crime podcasts do that. I mean, clearly there's a need in society for it, from podcast to Dateline that has, I don't know how many thousands of episodes out there and they're still going strong. And it is interesting. I mean, I watch those shows. I listen to the podcast from cases from other places. Part of that might be my own self-edification, but a big portion of that is it's interesting. It is interesting. So it is nice to see. And I'm glad you guys are doing it. Get the word out.
And that's definitely because as I was researching, because cold cases, obviously, as we've discussed before, my friend Krista Martin is one of Wichita's cold cases. In Wichita, there's no website. There's no tip line except for Crime Stoppers. There's nothing. And then when I saw your website and your initiative, I literally, oh my God, how many times I've done a podcast on this has just been incredible and put this on social media. So I won't harp on it anymore, but it is one of the most exciting initiatives I think Wichita has right now. So.
Yeah, we're excited about it too. I think it's a necessary thing. I really feel like for the community and for the families and friends. I mean, it's another segment of people's, you know, society or circle or sphere of influence, if you will, that maybe you don't think about all the time, but friendships and things like that are big, and those relationships come and go over the years. And we are trying to capitalize on some of that.
Yeah. And you said that the list could be changing throughout the years.
So we do. So we went back to the Bruce Douglas case, which was from 1974, is from 1974. And that's kind of what we would consider the recent information that we have on those, on homicides. We would go there. The reason I think that the list could grow, or the reason I put that in there, is because there are some older cases from the 50s and 60s, and even probably before that, if we got right down to it, that are there. So if we receive that information or develop that information, we'll still look at those cases. Even if we can show that, hey, this was the suspect on this case, or and we'll still look at that case. But the other thing, it could grow to include other unsolved crimes. If we have serious assaults or batteries, things like that, we could start to go that way, depending on what we see or kind of what the needs are of the department. So I didn't want to lump it in just to cold case homicides. Most places are doing cold case homicides or what they would call cold case sexual assaults.
That's one of the questions so I was going to have.
Yeah, absolutely, those types of things. The information that we have on those is not as readily accessible
right.
to me. It is there, but as this was. So this was kind of the first, let's push this out and just stick with these homicides right now. And that's where I think it could grow. There's also a chance that as we go back through and look at things, that we could look at other cases that may have had other resolutions at times, and we may decide, hey, this may actually have been a homicide. So there's always the potential for those types of things to happen. We have over the years had cases where it was deemed another cause of death, mm-hmm. and we've went back and had to lay and looked at it again later.
That's interesting.
And determined that there was a homicide.
Huh.
So I don't want to, not that anybody probably would say, no, no, you said you weren't going to do that. You can't put that on there. But
yeah.
I think it just, it lets people know, hey, there is always a potential for this to grow or for this to have more cases put on here. And to be honest with you, it probably keeps people coming back.
Yep, absolutely.
Looking to see, hey, has it changed? You know?
Is there a change? So, is there something new?
And I think there probably will be. I can't give you specifics right now, but I think there probably will be. Hopefully some of these we can, we have a couple unidentified bodies. That would be nice if we can find Jennifer Wilson's body. Those things would all be updates that we would want to put on here. And I'm sure we'd capitalize on that through our social media page and mm-hmm. and let people know that as well as things change. Those are big wins if we can get those.
Absolutely.
You know, may not be a solve, but that's still some step in the right direction.
Speaking of social media, have you guys thought of utilizing a social media page as another approach for your cold cases?
So right now, we've put it on the Sheriff's Facebook page, and that's probably where it'll stay right now.
Okay.
I think we're developing a little more of a social media presence we have over the last 4 or 5 years. So I think that will probably continue to grow within that segment through the Public Information Office. They're actually the ones who developed the page for me and worked with us on getting that stuff put together.
Okay.
So I imagine it will just be highlighted on there and with all the other
and pushing
videos.
Everybody back to the website.
I think it's probably best to have that kind of that centric location for people to go to, because I think whether or not, if we bring somebody there because we covered the Colwich Fall Festival on there, and they're like, oh, what's this cold case homicide thing? And vice versa. Hey, if somebody gets on there to look at the cold case thing in there, I think it just, if we have one location for people to come back to this, I think that's a little bit better suited. We get a lot of people who may never have looked at our webpage that would go to the sheriff's Facebook page because they're political person they want to look and see who our elected officials are, or some of the stuff that we cover. They put a lot of good stories on there. Or I think they've covered like our therapy dog that we have here in the office and things like that. So anytime I can get those people driven this way, that's a benefit to the program for sure.
Okay, great. Have you received any tips or any emails or anything since the website has been up?
I wouldn't categorize anything that we've received as a tip per se, more information of, have you guys done this? Have you thought about this? And which is still stuff I want to get and I want to look at.
Oh yeah.
But I guess I would think of a tip as something more that I'm going to take out here to one of the detectives and say, hey, we need to start looking at this right here. more kind of guiding. Like, again, people get in here and there's not a whole lot of information. So they're like, well, what about this or that? And I'm more than happy to answer those questions or go through those with people. Just, I feel like that's a good thing. I know I'm driving people here to the site and they're looking at it, and to have people, by no means do I think we managed to hire every critical investigative mind in the community to work at the sheriff's office. So we'll take the help that we can get for sure.
Yeah. So it definitely shows that people are looking at it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
That's great. The questions I did have is, okay, so that states that it's cold cases, that it's Sedgwick County cold cases. Mm-hmm. And then there is the city of Wichita cold cases. How exactly do those cold cases differentiate?
So jurisdictionally,
right.
Over the years, and since I've been on here in 1997, I can speak to that, those dates moving forward. And I think for the most part, probably the decade before that is pretty similar. But prior to that, they're all seem to be cases that we took the reports or recovered a body in what we would call the unincorporated areas of Sedgwick County. So outside the city limits. Over the years, we have had some where smaller jurisdictions, Park City or some of those places have asked us to assist on something. So those, we have taken those over the years. But these would all be cases that we as the sheriff's office took the initial reports on. And then the cities would be ones that they took the initial reports.
Okay.
So they have additional cases that they've looked into.
Okay. Okay. So on any of these cases, do you have a personal that you investigated personally or anything?
I really don't. This is really my first crack at most all of these cases. I spent the majority of my investigative years working narcotics and in a couple of different federal task forces. So this is a pretty fresh look. I've heard these names over the years because in investigations, as you're moving around, you see that, but and you hear those things. But yeah, for the most part, there's a lot of information here that's new to me, so which I kind of have to be careful as a supervisor to not get too far down some of those rabbit holes and let the investigators
definitely.
Do that, because it's easy to get in there. And there's a lot, like you showed, I showed you in the closet, there's a lot of information there that there's a lifetime of stuff to sit in there and read if you let yourself get down into the minutiae of it.
Oh, absolutely. And I would really like to get on tape what you had said with the captain.
Oh, boy.
About...
I'm not sure that's a good idea. What was that?
Before retirement, you had made a statement that before you retire, it just really struck home with me.
Yeah, I think we both... like you said, we came on together in February of 1997. And I think we just both would like to come up with a solve on one of these or move this forward. I don't know that I told him I wanted to solve one. I think that was his words. But I think there are some other achievable milestones within the program, bringing, like we talked about, older recording technology or older video technology up to current standards today so people can continue to work these. I think that is a big goal of mine, just because I think it's attainable. Getting a solve would be amazing, but there's a lot of other pieces and people that got to come into play to pull that off. So I try to set them a little more attainable. He's maybe a little more pie in the sky viewpoint on that, but it wouldn't hurt. It wouldn't hurt at all. I don't plan on staying here till I do solve one, or I don't plan on leaving right away if we do. So I think it is a goal just to keep moving it forward and try to get that done. I do think when a lot of people have worked these cases over the years. So to call them cold cases is kind of a misnomer sometimes, mm-hmm. only because in agencies this size or agencies the size of WPD, there's constantly people working these cases, whether it's their own, you know, inquisitive nature that they want to get a box out and they want to start looking through it, or we get a call, or some supervisor says, hey, we're going to update all this stuff. So we get it back out and we go back and we look through everything and we locate all the evidence and we do those things. So here, and I think I don't want to speak for WPD, but I think they're in a lot the same boat. Over the years, we have resubmitted forensic evidence, we've resubmitted fingerprints, we've relooked at case files, we've rewatched interviews, we've re-interviewed people. So we've been working the cases. They're just unsolved for us. I'm sure there are other jurisdictions in the state who don't have that luxury. They just don't have the manpower to do that. And it's a manpower intensive project for us too. But it is something that has kind of been worked. And if you looked up the Jennifer Wilson case, you know, yeah, we highlighted that on Crime Stoppers years ago. Yeah. They've always kind of been being worked. There's a wall out here of clipboards that have all the cases on them. And so sometimes I think it is, everybody understands what cold case means, but from our perspective, we've been working them. The city's been working them. It's just different here when you get to a big jurisdiction, or at least this jurisdiction. I can't speak to all of them because I know there's big cities out there. I think Kansas City, Kansas has been doing some work and they've got some big numbers too. And all of those cases probably haven't been looked at. But yeah. I can tell you that when we put the website up, I sent an email out to the entire sheriff's office and kind of to drive all our people to it to take a look. And it's amazing how many of the people who were investigators got a hold of me and said, oh, I looked at that case, or I looked at this case, or dating all the way back to Bruce Douglas in 74. So they've been worked and looked at over the years. So I guess where I'm going with that is, when the captain says we really want to get one solved before we retire, that's a really tall order, because I don't know that I have anything sitting in evidence, like a little piece of DNA that we're going to send somewhere and they're going to say, oh, it's this guy or this guy. I don't know that I have one like that, because we've done a lot of work on these over the years. So
yeah,
I feel like the biggest thing that we have right now, other than updating that technology in the cases, is capitalizing on people's relationships that have changed over the years.
Yeah.
You know, I might have been best friends with a guy 30 years ago, but we might not have talked in 20.
Exactly.
And now I see this and think, you know what? I'm going to call. It's the right thing to do. I mean, people change. I mean, I've changed in the 25 years I've worked here considerably.
Oh, yeah.
So I know that other people go through those same things. Families dissolve, marriages dissolve. I mean, there's a lot of things that go on there. And I think that's the big thing to capitalize on.
Oh, yeah.
Is that relationship change over the years. And there is some technology things. DNA changes every 6 months. It's changing. Fingerprints have changed in the last 6 or 7 years. And there are some things that are out there that do change. Clearly, in the true crime community, DNA genealogy is a hot topic of discussion. And that is something that is out there and it's new. And there are cases to be solved off of that. But I think when you watch one on TV or you hear about one, you don't always realize the level of hours that go into that. You can spend hundreds and hundreds of hours building out those family trees and working on those things. And that's a specialty that not just anyone can pull off.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a lot of work that gets done. And a lot of times that work gets done and it doesn't take us maybe to a resolution on the case, but we still keep all that information and we put it back away and we put it in the box for another day. And then we'll come back to it if we get something that gives us a little bit more, but yeah, so they are worked a lot. And hopefully we can get some information that helps us update some of them. And yeah, if we can get one solved, or we can find somebody's body who we haven't found yet, or we can identify an unidentified body, I think those are big deals.
Oh yeah,
you know, that's
definitely
something that we want to work towards for sure.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that would go a long way in letting their family or whoever. I mean, it's really sad when there is a body that you don't know who they are and don't know who might be missing them.
Yeah.
So,
and obviously the families are a big motivator. I think just in general, whether it's a homicide case or a domestic violence case, victims are important to us. And I think that's, you know, you hear people talk about closure, but psychology would tell us that that's non-existent.
Yeah.
It's more of a resolution situation or things like that. And I know you'd sent me a question about working with the families, and we do, anytime they call, we absolutely will communicate with them. I do find it sometimes, where do you strike the balance of letting them bring that back? If they've got it in a place where they're okay with it right now and we're working it and they don't want to necessarily talk about it all the time. So trying to let them know that it's okay, with projects like this, like, hey, they're looking at these things. They put this out here. I'm going to call and talk to them and see what's going on. Great. But if it's something that they think, I'm in a good place right now. This is a tragic situation, and they've worked through it with a therapist or a counselor or a psychologist, whoever. You hate to keep dragging it back all the time. So sometimes we just work them in the quiet of the office and kind of leave them, you know, where they're at. But yeah, that's, the families are a big motivator for sure. And some stay more involved than others.
Yeah.
The case I originally told you about, the family is the one that had done the original newspaper article.
Oh, really?
That was online. So, mm-hmm. I think, you know, there's never a bad time for a family to do that. You know, I think they definitely can move the ball forward as well. And again, some of it is getting it online. And to be honest with you, when the Wichita Eagle covered it and they covered every name and case, they did us a huge favor by getting that information onto the internet one more time. So it just, all those things help us. Every time somebody puts it out there, it definitely helps us for sure.
Oh, definitely.
People can find us. And that's what it's all about right now, getting people to be able to find us.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and like you had said, I mean, you don't know where any suspects may be at anymore. So it's however far-reaching it can go.
Right.
And that's the good thing about social media these days, is when it's retweeted or shared or anything.
Right.
You don't know.
And so. we have... We had spoke, I think, off recording at one point about the Kansas Department of Corrections playing cards. And we are taking part in that. We put three cases on there. We put Cassandra Jones from 1999. We put the Jennifer Wilson case we've already spoke about from, we believe, 2002. And then Welly Sayakasone from 2015. Those are the three we submitted, and they picked all three of those up. And I think that's starting to come out now. I don't know. I haven't received any emails on the printing update, but I know that's they've selected everything and they are moving forward with that. So we have the front door, and in the lobby there we put up a bulletin board, I guess, out there, for lack of a better term, that has, we're putting four of our cold cases on there, just basically the print offs on the from the website. And then on one half of it, I put the same sheet up, just all the playing cards on there for KDOC to get people to go that way and look at some of their stuff too.
And I'm not sure if you know the answer to this or not, but with the playing cards, do those just go to the prisons in Kansas then?
Well, my understanding is that those will be sold within the prison system in Kansas to the inmates. If they buy playing cards, those are the ones they would be buying. So when they, I assume when they leave prison, they'll be able to take those cards with them. I don't know how that system works per se, but I think right now that's the my understanding was they're just going to be here. Other states around the country have done the same or similar programs, I think, and that just stays in their state. As far as where those cards go later, I don't know. It's hard to say where they end up. I'm sure we'll find them all over the places as the years go on and people get released and take those cards with them and things like that. And I think there may be some jails in the area that are going to pick those up as well. I don't know. I know we haven't decided yet one way or the other on that, what the expense is and some things like that on that. But I know KDOC's, they're all about it. They moved pretty fast with that project.
Started
last year and they're already printing now. So we're excited to see where that one goes to. And we tried to pick a wide range of cases to look at, and we just submitted all of them, but the crunch was pretty fast when we got the information, so we submitted what we had and went with those three. I think they're going to do some other series of cards, so if that's the case, we'll continue to push those out, and we'll probably expand this project's footprint into the jail. We haven't really figured out how. We've discussed it a few times. The question's always that how do we secure the tips? How do those things happen? And what's that look like as far as if somebody in here wants to talk about that, a case?
And then what can we do as the civilians, as the true crime nerds?
Yeah.
besides, you know, driving people back to the website, especially, you know, for those of us who have a loved one who is on the unsolved list, and, you know, we're feeling overwhelmed still 30 some years later, and, you know, we're lost and confused and, you know, wanting some sort of answers. What exactly can we do?
Well, I would say case specific, that's a tough one. Yeah. I would say that, I'm on the department's peer support team. The case specific stuff's pretty tough. But I, you know, would encourage, you know, people who are struggling with a particular case to, you know, talk to somebody.
Right.
First of all.
We
but
do
I,
that.
But and I would say that it never hurts. We all do it. Everybody should do it. But I think doing what you're doing right now is probably the best thing. Just getting the conversation, well, going or continuing, I think is a huge, huge thing. And I think telling people that, you know, not everybody grew up here.
Right.
Everybody wasn't born here. Everybody has life experiences in other places. Take a minute to get online and see if the agency where you grew up is doing something. And maybe they have something on there that you could help on.
That's a good idea.
I think that's probably the things is taking a minute to say, is there somewhere else in the country that I spent 6 months, you know, as getting trained for work or whatever, you know, and seeing what's out there and saying, oh, you know what, I was in Indianapolis in 95. And they've got a case. I wonder what that is. And just looking at it and seeing what it's there and saying, oh, yeah, maybe I do know something. I think a lot of times people feel like, well, I don't have any information because I didn't see somebody shoot someone or I didn't see somebody stab someone. But there's a lot of cases we solve that aren't eyewitness reports of the actual murder. They give it's a path that they take us down. So, yeah, that's what I would encourage people to do and continue doing these kind of things. I'm sure there's agencies that maybe don't have as a positive response to stuff because they are still they want to play everything close to the vest and they're just not sure and it's understandable. That's where we came from. That's absolutely where we came from. That's a model that a lot of agencies have followed over the years and a lot of agencies probably still follow. But I've got people out here that sit on social media and look at stuff and we get stuff. We take stuff off social media too. So. It's not just the everybody else. So we put stuff on there for a reason. That's a big part of this this initiative and getting the word out. But yeah, I think just getting the word out is a big thing. And take a minute to go back and look at the towns you grew up in or you traveled in consistently over the years and see if there's something there that you know or you remember. You never know what jogs your mind for sure.
Absolutely. All right. Well, this has been great.
Thanks, Marianne.
So I really appreciate you.
Got one quick. Maybe it's been covered on the website, and I'm guessing this is kind of a double-edged sword asking this. The cases that you put on there, how did you select those? Because you're always going to probably get some backlash of some people. It's like, well, why wasn't my loved one on that list? I mean, was there...
So as a...
I guess kind of what was the selection?
Right.
I mean, there were these cases that you had a lot of evidence on, but you just needed that... One little thing,
I guess. So as of right now, those are the 19 cold case homicides that we, from 1974 to date.
Okay, so it is actually every one of them.
It's everyone that we've identified to date.
Okay.
So if there's a family out there that looks on there and feels like their loved one should be on there, then they are welcome to call us because I'll be more than happy to talk to them. And they may be right. We make mistakes all the time. So it could be something that we've missed for sure. But as of right now, those are the ones we've identified, since, like I said, January 24th, 1974.
Okay.
If somebody sees that and they feel like there should be a loved one on there, they need to call Sergeant Lynch at the sheriff's office and we'll have a conversation and it may get on there and it may not, be something.
I guess that's kind of what reason
yes,
why I asked.
Absolutely. We didn't limit it at all.
Okay.
We did not limit it at all. We didn't want to do that. I think all of those are important, and we don't have, if we had several hundred, I probably still would have tried to push it out during National Crime Victim Week this year with those 19 and just said, hey, we're still coming. I'd keep putting them on there just to get it out there and start the process going. But as of right now, those are the ones we've identified that for the Sedgwick County Sheriff's Office. So hopefully nobody's sitting out there thinking, why isn't my loved one on there? And if they are, they should call us, please.
Yeah. Absolutely. I thought of something and then it went away.
That happens to me all the time.
I know.
So I have these lists of notes everywhere. All over.
Notes. I should have wrote it down.
It's the organization class.
It was great.
Yes. I have the handout
somewhere. So at the end of every one of our podcasts, since you guys have put out the list, we do, we only cover, except for National Baking Day, we covered a crime outside of Kansas. It was disgusting, but we covered it. But at the end of it, we cover one. We take one of the cases that you guys have and we read it out. And then we drive everybody back to the site. So just to let you guys know, we are doing that. And so we will continue to do that, but it would be great if in the future we can hopefully get with an investigator and, you know, sometime in the future, highlight and actually do a showcase of one of the cases would be great.
Absolutely. And we've also partnered with, Wichita Crime Stoppers on that. I know you mentioned them at one point, but I kind of got to give them a thank you. They were, kind enough to let us utilize their logo and their anonymous tip line. Not everybody wants to come forward, you know, with their name and everything. So if it's an anonymous tip, people can definitely go to their site as well. Our site has the link and their form on there that people can fill out. You don't have to do that. You can call the number here or email coldcase@sedgwick.gov. But I think we're going to continue to partner with Crime Stoppers and kind of do the same thing, chronicle one case maybe around town and some things like that. We have done that in the past, and hopefully we can kind of continue that. But they've been pretty motivated to get on board, and they were pretty excited when we went and talked to them about the process.
That'll be great. Because, I think you're right. A lot of people don't want to have their name or their information out there, especially if it is a previous loved one or somebody they had a relationship with.
Sure.
So,
I think I don't feel like I have any of that in my past at this point. I haven't come across anything, but I can imagine that's a heavy burden to carry around if you do have that.
Yeah.
For your entire life. I don't know what that would be like, but I can imagine that there are times that when you're by yourself that you think, you know what, maybe it's time that I say something. And mm-hmm. we want to make sure we're here to listen if you want to say something, that's for sure. But that's a mindset that I don't possess that. I can't speak to it too much other than to say, we're all good listeners here. Feel free to call.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. I think that's it.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you guys for taking that.
So Sergeant Lynch with the Sedgwick County Sheriff's Department is going into the cold case initiative realistically, which as an investigator and the leader of the cold case initiative, he needs to do. But I'm going to side with the captain. I'm a double rainbows kind of girl. I believe that somewhere someone has a secret. Someone knows something. And that secret has become too heavy. That person wants to unburden themselves. Because that's how a lot of these cases get solved. As Sergeant Lynch had said, relationships change, marriages end. Somebody has or knows something. And what you know can finally bring peace to a family, to a friend. Because 10 years later, 20 years later, 30 years later, they still have questions. They still want to know. And you're the only one that can help them.